Hi there, everyone. It's James here for and Vanna.
I'm
not on my own. James and Vanna here for the It's Your Move podcast. And we are still in January, just, and it is the second lesson in expanding the garden, kind of a kickoff series. Yes. Get the year started, get us focused. What are some of the things we need to be focusing on, want to be focusing on in 2020?
That's right.
Nice.
Excited about the year, I think. And I do believe that if we actually tackle these handful of things that we're talking about and make it a focus for the year, I do think we'll make progress up that mountain.
Yes.
Towards expanding the garden.
Yes. And I think one of the, you know, one of the points, and I think you made it quite nicely with the mountain, was, you know, last week we spoke about Fuller House, and we spoke about wanting to a number of things that we're wanting to do in 2020, as in Camp 1, Camp 2, Camp 3, and then kind of snuck in, okay, well, let's talk about base camp.
Yes.
Like, before any of these dreams and goals can be achieved, what needs to be in place at a foundational level, aside from, of course, a thriving relationship with God, and that's assumed, and you mentioned that, but healthy discipling relationships.
That's right.
And
high-definition relationships.
High-definition
relationships. Which I also like. I must say, it sort of came randomly, but there's an attractiveness to that as well.
No, totally. And I think there's an element, and maybe we'll can unpack a little bit what, you know, how it was defined, and talk about that. But I think it's one of those points where we know it's true. The average person knows that having accountability, mentorship, teaching, someone to help me in any endeavor is a necessary
necessary evil.
I didn't say that is necessary, and yet I think there is also a part of us, many of us, I think, listening to the podcast, that knows that right now your discipling relationships are maybe not as healthy as they should be, given some of the things that were discussed. So let's just talk a little bit about this definition. I know, okay, that this is a definition. It's your working definition.
Yes, working definition. Just a place to work from.
Totally. And kind of verbatim, the slide was, it's having a loving and safe relationship in which we are taught and held to account. Maybe we can talk about those a little bit.
Yes.
Because this is different than having just spiritual friends.
Yes, it certainly is. And obviously the spiritual friends might be, so in a healthy discipling relationship, one should obviously be spiritual friends.
Yes.
But I think the spiritual friends idea can have the loving and safe part in it.
Mm.
So in other words, I feel loved by you, I feel safe with you, but I'm not taught nor held to an account. So we actually just, sadly, just in the same family group or congregation, where a healthy discipling relationship is obviously more than that.
Yes.
There is an helping of, and again, when we came up with that working definition, it's just a working definition, and you could choose many words, but is it taught and held to account? It could be trained mm-hmm. and held to an account, mm-hmm. that it would obviously look different for a younger Christian and an older Christian. But someone in my, ultimately it's going to be, I need someone in my life, Matthew 28, I need someone in my life that's going to help me to reflect Jesus more and more, and hold me to an account.
Mm, mm.
And I think sometimes we can view accountability, and we will talk about it in 2 weeks from now, two Sundays from now. We'll talk more about that in the Sunday. But we can have a negative view on accountability instead of seeing it, if it's done in a loving, safe relationship, that it's actually a very helpful to you, if your desire is that I want to expand the garden and bear his image into it. Now, a random thing that I thought about this morning, or prayed about this morning, can't remember which, was this. Obviously, expanding the garden, bearing his image into it, I cannot expand a garden that I do not have. So if I'm not living a garden life, I can definitely not expand the garden.
Yes.
I know this is now a little bit sidetracked, but if I don't have a garden life, there is nothing to expand. And even if I'm expanding something, it's not the garden. I'm expanding religiosity, church programs, or whatever it might be, but I'm not expanding the garden. And obviously the aim of the game here with healthy discipling relationships is that it will help me to, let's say, one, live the garden life by being the image of God, of Christ, and then obviously taking that garden life and expanding the borders of the garden by drawing more people into the garden that I have, not the garden that I do not have, not the garden that I pretend to have, or the garden that I believe should be or could be, but the garden that I'm actually having. And by that, I don't mean a perfect life or a perfect family group, but where the basics of what it is that God is calling us to live is there.
Yes.
So that was now a bit of a sidetrack, but I did think that was semi-important.
No, I think it's very important. So just talking a little bit about these healthy discipling relationships. So my guess would be within a church family like ours, there would be a number of discipling relationships that are written down on paper, or we have a mutual agreement that we're in a discipling relationship.
Or at least your family group leader thinks you are.
someone, yeah, exactly. You've been paired up in someone's mind.
Yeah.
But it certainly wouldn't be considered healthy, and you're going to unpack that a little bit in
the next
sermons
Sundays,
to come. There'll be a group of people that are in somewhat of a healthy relationship, and that's something that could maybe grow to be healthier. And then there'll be some people who they know that they're not in a discipling relationship, and they've got lots of people around them. They're trying to pursue some form of spirituality, but for whatever reason, they've chosen not to be in a kind of a dedicated relationship like this. And I think one of the great things, or the things I enjoyed about the sermon, was it was like, okay, so why do I need this? Let's just talk about it a little bit openly. The one point was this, well, the first point was about, you know, about heading somewhere that that as a disciple, I need help getting from here to there.
That's right.
I need help. Why, you know, speak to the person who doesn't want help. Why would I, because I understand it. I mean, I've got a lot of independence in me, a lot of self-reliance. There is a voice in my head that says, James, you've got the Bible, you've got your prayer life, you're a capable person, you can figure this out for yourself. Why would someone reject help?
Because you think you can figure it out for yourself, because you have a skewed picture of yourself. You don't have someone holding up a mirror to help you. Mm. And I mentioned we can obviously fall on the deceived or the accused side of this, but and I'm not negating that someone maybe got hurt in the past, or something was said, or the person who is your discipling partner is not very kind, which then means it's not a healthy discipling relationship. Mm. But I think the majority of the times, as I said on Sunday, is we simply don't want light in our life. Mm. And for me to have someone in my life that is willing to bring a torch and a mirror is uncomfortable. Mm. I don't want to hear that there is something that I need to pay attention to. And this is particularly one of your guilty soul, definitely, because if like, and I know I felt this historically, as where I felt like, listen, dude, before you start speaking to me, my list of things that I need to work on.
I'm already tough on myself. I already know this.
I've got a lot of things. So if you put something a little extra on there, that might just tilt the apple cart completely. Instead of even then approaching you and saying, listen, you dude, there's a lot of stuff that I'm, and me driving the agenda, for my own spiritual well-being. Mm-hmm. Maybe that would even change that. But I would say that's the big thing, is I don't want to know the truth. Mm. I don't want to deal with me. Mm. I don't want to deal with whatever it is that is in my heart, and whether it is that I'm lazy, I'm on the sidelines in the kingdom, I am involved in impurity, whatever it might be, having a person dedicated to me whose primary concern is my spiritual interest is going to make life hard for me. And I'm not honest enough to say that maybe I've lost the dream. Maybe I don't have the desire to be like Jesus. And, and I remember years ago we would use this example. If you're a golfer and Tiger Woods comes to offer to spend time with you and show you a couple of moves, I mean, wouldn't it be obvious that would be a no-brainer yes? So when will I say no to Tiger Woods is if Tiger Woods is in actual fact Wernher Voss the golfer. Okay, and I don't think he can be helping me. And so either I have a skewed perspective of Tiger Woods or he's not capable, but usually why don't I do it? It's I don't think he can help me or I don't want to be helped. And both of those things are issue-y because if you're my discipling partner and I feel like you can't help me, that might even be true. Then why don't I ask someone else?
Move family groups.
Move family groups and go to someone that I think can help me.
Yeah.
And if then again you get to this place where there's, but we've heard this, Lisa and I've heard this a lot, only so-and-so can help me, or only this one or that one, or there's like two people that can help me, then that's very problematic, okay, about you. Because if there's only two people in the whole congregation that can help you, it says more about you than the two people.
Totally. Yeah.
And all honesty, I'm not sure if people in that crowd is listening to this podcast.
No, that's also true.
So we might be speaking to the wrong group and saying that.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I mean, I do think, you know, accountability. I mean, I have a desire for comfort, and accountability is very difficult for me. But yet I know I need it.
And why is it difficult?
I think that there's the pride in my heart that would say, I know what you're going to say already, so do I need to hear it again from someone else? I think that's true. I feel like my schedule is already feels already overloaded, and I'm worried that you're going to add something.
Yes, sure.
And I feel sometimes that emotionally I can't, you know, might not be able to handle that.
And so are you not talking in general, or are you actually talking about you and me?
No, I'm talking about me in general.
So Mark then.
but yeah, oh, you in general. Yeah, exactly. Or anyone holding me accountable for anything, really. But yeah, I think there's a part of me that also just wants to figure this out for myself, and I want to be the master of my own situation. And as soon as someone is holding me accountable, it feels like I'm letting go.
Letting go.
But what's a challenge is, and I've taught this and I do believe this definitely, is that it is God's plan to work through other people.
Yes.
That's how it works.
That's how he rolls, yeah.
That's how he rolls. And I think any rejection of that, any kind of sense of I don't want to have that accountability, I don't want to have these difficult conversations, or It is a rejection of God's ways, and I think that's our arrogance. I mean, I was in a conversation this week, and we were discussing the Old Testament, and we were discussing Jeremiah and what have you. The idea of digging your own wells, digging your own cisterns, versus relying on living water from the Lord. And I think that is, you know, my sinful nature wants to pick up the shovel and figure it out for myself and dig my own well and set up my own little life according to what makes me feel comfortable. And when I do that, I stop God from entering, because what God wants and what I want, you know, how can I say that they're the same things? I mean, God has a perspective on me that, you know, I will only find out when I open myself up. And I think that's the danger. That's the sadness that I have when someone's not in a healthy discipling relationship. Because I feel like you're cutting yourself off from God. You can come to church, but you are cutting yourself off from God.
Well, if we do that, then in essence, we are not being disciples. Disciple is follower of Jesus. Paul says, follow me as I follow Christ. So I need someone leading the way. And I think sometimes even our terminology can get old, and we can, through our terminology, create false theology. Let's say, for instance, okay, because of my sinful nature, I'm not getting the help I need. We love that word, sinful nature. More accurate description would be, because of my stupidity, I'm not getting the help that I need.
Mm.
Okay, it's the Ben Johnson quote. You as Bunny, as myself as a teacher, as a fool for a master.
Yeah.
Okay, if I realize these different things that we spoke about on Sunday, if I realize, sure, I'm supposed to be heading somewhere, and it's impossible for me to get there myself. The heart is deceitful above all else and beyond cure. So I can't make an assessment on myself, either good or bad. I might see myself as worse, or I might see myself as better, but I just can't. I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If I realize that a sin has a hardening effect and I need someone to help me see it and to encourage me towards that end, then this is not a necessary evil, which I think many people view it that way. It's not a necessary evil, it's a gift. I'm not just talking about tough conversations. I'm talking about the fact that you can pick up the phone and call someone for advice. In other words, I think of how many times, even in last year, even just around parenting, where I felt like, oh my word, I don't know what I'm doing. I really don't. I just don't. But I can pick up the phone. And I pick up the phone and I unpack the story and I say, listen, I'm not sure if I'm responding right. I'm not sure who it is that I need to be. I'm not sure. Help me. And I think I'll talk about this in one of the lessons, but how often I have through the years had to say to someone, listen, here's what went down, either between Lisa and myself, or me and one of the girls, or me and another Christian for that matter. Yes, that went down. And I try to not paint myself in the positive or necessarily in the negative. I try and paint the view of both sides and say, this didn't go well. What do you think? What do you think about my response? What do you think? And sometimes I say, please speak to the other person too. Or if it's Lisa, let's get her in the room as well. But it's a gift. It's a gift that we can do that. It's a total gift that someone would give us time and be willing to hold up a mirror and be willing to train and educate us. And I think I often look at people in the world and I don't know how they do it. I don't know. I think of who I would be without God and without other people in my life. In other words, I feel like 99% of what I know, I've been taught. I know 100% we've been taught actually through life. But parenting, marriage, dealing with my own character challenges, everything I have been taught. How to be with people, I've been taught. None of those things come naturally for me. It was someone that has helped me. It is someone that helped me with how to have godly sorrow. It was someone that helped me with how to get to know the scriptures. It was someone that helped me with what does it even mean to be a Christian? Or what is sin? What is not sin? What is repentance? Someone helped me. I didn't come to any of these insights by myself. And it wasn't just in the beginning when I first became a Christian and someone did Bible studies with me. It has been through all that time where people would help me. And I've even had people say to me, where I share the story, as this is the deal, if need be the other person, and the person would say, seems like you're moving in the right direction, stay the course.
Yeah, yeah.
But even that affirmation is helpful for me because I think I'm going nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, I'm on a path that doesn't seem for me to take me where it needs to, and I've had many of these conversations with Duncan, and he would say, dude, stay the course. I think you're moving in the right direction. Stay the course. Don't give up. Stay the course. It's needed. Well, it's needed for me.
One of the terms that that comes up in conversations that I've had with people around discipling is, oh yes, it's great to have someone to ask advice from. And I don't know what your take is. It always bugged me a little bit because in my mind, I feel like advice is something that you should be seeking from multiple sources, depending on the situation, but there's a difference between someone that I'm asking advice on a specific area where I feel like I see my need, and someone that I'm getting with regularly that's helping hold me account to the decisions that I'm making and that we collectively are working through, you know, the fact that I possibly need to make. And that the points that you made on avoiding a hardening of heart, I think we're quite powerful because this is something spiritual. This is something that we are cultivating in order to live a God-glorifying life and in order to be icons. This is not an advice thing. Advice is something that is, I feel like it almost waters down the spiritual nature of godly accountability when it gets distilled to, oh, I get together every 2 weeks to get advice?
Well, maybe the terminology is wrong, the advice, because there's a positive and a negative in it, and there are different ways in it. So listen, I've often, people would say, well, I'll get with you when I need advice.
Yes.
Okay, so in other words, and that's usually when things are falling apart.
Yes.
So my wife has actually locked me out. I can't get in to the house or in her heart, and we need some advice. Yeah, sure you do. Okay. there's that part, or there's some advice on I've been retrenched and I don't know what it is. So everything is sort of forcing you towards that advice. Or maybe the person is a bit of an expert in something and buying a car, and there's that form of advice. What car do you advise, or what have you? But then there's another form of advice for me that I feel like should be happening all the time is I'm bringing you into my life and asking your advice, your counsel. So in other words, I say, okay, James, what I've realized is that, and I've spoken about this recently with Lisa, that I'm not a good listener, where I don't hear what it is that she is trying to say to me. And I'm saying trying because I'm not making it easy for her to be heard. Okay, so now the way I usually go through these things, sometimes I don't see it at all, and then someone tells me afterwards, or she tries to tell me and I defend it, and then we bring in someone new and they tell me, but they're actually seeing what she's seeing, and that's a long and complex process that doesn't have to be that way. Okay, versus I am realizing, sure, I'm not a good listener. Why? And I start exploring that and I bring you into that conversation. So now I'm saying, James, I really need your advice, your counsel here, okay? That this is what happened. We had this conversation with detail. This is what happened. This is what we spoke of. This is how I responded. This is what I've seen so far in me, that I see my defenses coming up. These are some scriptures that I've been looking at, and what I got out of them, what I'm seeing and exploring. I'm a little bit overwhelmed, as in, because I'm not sure if I can ever change. That could be an option. But so now I'm asking your counsel, what do you think? What do you think about what I've said so far? What do you think of what I've shared about, first of all, let's say Lisa and I had a conflict, the conflict itself. What do you think about that? What do you think about my response to the conflict? What do you think about what I'm getting out of the scriptures? What do you see? Have you experienced me that way? So I'm also asking advice. But it's with a very different purpose. The purpose is not, I'm in trouble, and listen, if you're not going to step in and help me, I might lose my spouse. In other words, I've been locked out. This is I have a desire to live a God-honoring life, okay? And I've realized that my behavior has not been God-honoring, and that's a problem for me. And it's not been God, only not been God honoring, but because it's not been God honoring, usually what isn't God honoring is also hurtful to God and others. And so I'm approaching you from the point of view that, man, I think I've hurt my wife by this non-God glorifying, God honoring behavior, and I want to fix that. It's bothering me. And so please, can we talk? I need advice. So there's that side, and then there's the side of, I never had a child. So the first child that I had, how am I supposed to know how to raise a child? You know, people tend to then go for, well, I'm going to raise them like my parents raised them, raised me, if I was happy with that, or the opposite, and not saying, hey, as a disciple, you're ahead of me, your kids are older, what do you think? But that is certainly, in my mind, a way of seeking advice that is healthy, and that I am coming to learn, and I am coming saying, hey, well, my kid acts out, I don't know how to discipline them. I have a teenager, I don't know how to navigate this. We have these fights, this business, I don't know how to do it. And what's my motivation? God-honoring life. I'm approaching you not because my teen is driving me nuts and I want to kill them, and if you don't help me, I am going to kill them. Not that. I mean, there might be a little bit of that in there. But it's more, I feel like we've been given a gift in life, and when it's all said and done, I do want to be able to hear Jesus say, well done, good and faithful servant. In other words, with what you've had from a gift point of view, people around you point of view, Listen, we all know you didn't live a remotely perfect life and you're not even capable of doing it, but well done, good and faithful servant. I sensed through your life your desire to honor me in your speech and your thoughts and everything, and you blew it, but then you again got people in your life and you got back on track. That's what I want to prayerfully hear at the end. Not vanity ticked all the boxes and you were awesomeness itself. That's not going to happen.
Totally.
But for me, that needs to be the driving force, is my desire to be the image, to be whom God has made me to be. And if I don't have that, something's missing. So this idea of I need to explain to you why I don't need to change, there's just something missing there. Because if Jesus is living inside of you, he wants to continuously renew you into his image. And if I'm remaining status quo, it means that Jesus is not living and active in my life.
Yeah. Hectic. But I think I appreciate that. And I think, look, over the next couple of weeks, I know you're going to unpack a little bit, you know, kind of what would one of these relationships look like, you know, in a little bit more detail. And, I appreciate, the example that you just shared, because I think it's easy just for us to get weird about it. As opposed to, this is a gift, and I need to. If I come into a discipling relationship with a willingness to be held to account, and I'm bringing an agenda forward to say, hey, these are things that I need to work on. How can could you please help me? These are what I'm thinking. Just the whole spirit about it is just very different, and I do believe that it allows the other person and God through the other person to help, but. Yeah. I do. If you're listening and you feel like there is some work to be done in your own discipling relationships, I want to encourage you. Don't be weird.
Do the work.
Pick up the phone, call your discipling partner. If they were in Kids Zone and they didn't listen to the sermon, ask them if they could listen to the sermon. Make sure they have. Just sit down and talk about it. Hey, this is what I want. This is what, this is what we need to work on. And hey, it's 2020. Let's get this right.
And how do we make it work? Listen, we are all sinful. We all have different strengths and weaknesses and different personalities. But how do we make it work? And I've historically had to sit down with people both ways. Now, it's someone that has either been discipling me or me discipling someone and saying, listen, I don't think it's working. I don't think we need a battleship here, but I don't think this would be more helpful to me. What do you think? Okay. Or I don't feel safe. Okay, well, why don't you feel safe? Let's talk about it. We'd love for you to feel safe. But you have to talk it through. It's like a marriage. It doesn't just work. There are good days, there are bad days, but you need to continue to talk it through like any relationship. And so one of the ingredients that we're going to take a look at is relationship, a healthy discipling relationship. And obviously, what are some basics that will constitute that? But we're going to speak about that on Sunday.
Brilliant. Well, Vanna, thanks very much for the time.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. And we'll speak again soon.
Thank you. Cheers.